The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to Report from Europe. We are joined by Tim Bellman, Head of Global Research at Invesco Real Estate, a real estate investment manager. He leads Invesco Real Estate's 15-person global research team and helps real estate investors develop strategies for cross-border investment. He joins us by phone from London, England. Tim Bellman, welcome to Report from Europe.
Thanks, Mike. Pleasure to be with you.
Pleasure to have you here, Tim. And, you know, you grabbed my attention when I was looking through our July-August edition of Institutional Real Estate Europe. You authored an article headlined Upswing with Uncertainty, and the subhead goes on to talk about U2's landmark Joshua Tree album, and its anniversary is coming up here, and you were saying that the Joshua Tree has much to teach us about diversification. Let's start at that point. What does the U2 album, the Joshua Tree, really have to teach us about real estate diversification? Obviously, there's some interpretation going on here. Explain that.
Part of it, of course, is to do with the fact that the tour of U2 is going on sort of right now. It's the 30th anniversary. That they happen to be playing at the National Rugby Stadium here in London on Saturday the 8th of July. So it seemed like a topical thing at the time that I was preparing this article. And I think really, as I thought about it a little bit, I guess the main analogy is that in any good sort of album, especially one that's going to endure the test of time, it's that it's based on a complementary blend of songs, that it's more than just the sum of the parts. And yes, there are a few iconic tracks, but those are complemented by supporting tracks that make the whole thing better. And I'd argue that that's really the same with a real estate portfolio. A portfolio benefits from a sector or a market and an asset level of diversification. It may combine some iconic assets with complementary quality assets in the portfolio. And I think that's how you position a portfolio to target potential upside, and you know, the diversification helps you insulate you against potential downside risks should those come about. So that's, I think, if you like, what an album can teach you about putting together a real estate portfolio.
My favorite U2 album happens to be Achtung rather than the Joshua Tree, although they're both noted as two of the band's greatest. And for any of our listeners who aren't familiar with U2, I would find that hard to believe, but obviously the Irish rock band that's been huge in the industry for years, both in album sales and live performances, and also politically, a politically active band, particularly with its lead singer, Bono. So let's talk about the phrase upswing of uncertainty, Tim. What is an upswing of actually, I said that wrong. Is what is an upswing with uncertainty?
Yeah, well, two parts really, and it's the alliteration that's of the two U's that is what I'm playing on there a little. First, the upswing. I think it's we're in a really interesting time. Because I think since the global financial crisis in 2007-2008, global economic growth has been sluggish on average, and few major developed economies have fired on all cylinders for long, and far less have they done it together. And in the first half of 2017, really for the first time in 10 years, that appears to be changing. The U.S. economy is continuing to purr along despite the political upheavals. 2.5% is the kind of consensus forecast. China's proven more resilient than people thought and appears to be picking up again, 6.5% economic growth maybe. Japan and Australia are continuing to grow. The U.K., where I am at the moment, is a little wobbly, but it's fared better in the last year than almost anybody thought possible in the kind of the Brexit negotiation stage as that sort of emerged in the forecast of 1.5% to 2% growth. And even the leading indicators and economic performance of the Eurozone, which has long been the laggard, are really very promising at the moment. The leading indicators are flashing about as positive a signal as you can get about the Eurozone. It was the fastest growing major economy for the last two quarters in the world. And the prognosis for Germany, the engine at its core, and now France too, continue to look positive. And if you put all that together, there are these, I think, the basis for hope that a broad-based global economic recovery will provide further fuel to the demand for real estate and help support market fundamentals around the world. But the second U I can't leave out is uncertainty. And whilst the real estate market fundamentals appear pretty robust, with occupancy rates improving, rents rising in more markets, little in the way of supply to or debt concerns, there are some macro uncertainties that cloud the outlook for real estate and all the other asset classes. Political and geopolitical risks are both elevated around the world. So too is capital market risk in a period when monetary policy is changing at different speeds around the world. So I think you have to see that upswing and the implications for the real estate market in that context of the uncertainty of the macro context.
So, Tim, do you happen to know why you two chose the upswing with uncertainty theme, or you chose that theme? Tell us about the relationship there.
Well, it is much more my theme, my interpretation, than theirs. I was mainly picking up on the alliteration of the two U's, the upswing and uncertainty, to give me U2. But there are more parallels than that. I mean, the Joshua Tree album was written in the U.S. in the mid-1980s, and that was a period of great political change and economic upheaval in the U.S. It's, in some ways, it's like today. And one of the working titles U2 had for the album was, I think, The Two Americas, which was, they were referring to what they considered the real America and the mythical America, the America of the kind of the working man in the economy, and the mythical America of the American dream, and contrasting the two. And in some ways, that seems apt for today's economic and political environment too.
Let's talk about. You see this kind of as remarkably timely in the world of real estate, according to the article. Why now? I think you may have covered this to some extent, Tim, but maybe capsulize that. Why do you think that the timing is remarkably good with regard to real estate?
Well, I think it's three things, really. I think the concept of the upswing and with uncertainty comes in three areas. It's the strength of demand for real estate, the fact that the supply response has generally been pretty muted around the world to the upswing in real estate demand, and the fact that investors and lenders have been pretty disciplined over the last few years with little or no evidence of rising loan-to-value ratios, for example, or rising levels of lending to new construction, for example. And so if you put those three things together, the reason that an upswing, coordinated upswing around the world starts to be a fascinating context to consider the real estate outlook is that so many investors and others are sort of questioning how long in the tooth the expansion is in different parts of the world, etc. But it could well be that the global nature of the synchronized upswing provides a little more longevity to the current upswings that various markets around the world are seeing. They become mutually reinforcing. That's why I think the timing's interesting.
Now, you did mention the synchronized growth, and I wanted to ask about the indicators of that, but you did mention that you're seeing resilient growth in China. I think you mentioned also Japan and Australia, among others. Are there any other indicators that you would cite that led you to the conclusion that what we're seeing right now is a synchronized growth in the real estate market?
Well, the most important variables for real estate, Mike, usually are not so much the economic headline numbers of GDP on their own, but it's how it translates into employment effects and the strength of employment growth and the consequences for unemployment in the different locations. And as I think many will appreciate, U.S. employment growth has been strong for a long time now, and unemployment has reached what many economists would argue is close to frictional levels, in which it's difficult to go a lot lower than that. But and employment growth is now picking up in the other countries too. It's picking up in the Eurozone. So the strength of the Southern European employment growth is beginning to address some of the challenges that the economies in Spain and Italy faced in the early post-global financial crisis period, where unemployment hit 25% or so. That's now coming down. So as employment growth is broadening out around the world, that is helping drive demand for real estate. And I always think employment itself, the numbers in employment, is the single best indicator for real estate demand. If you just had to pick one, that's the one I pick.
Now, you also write that there are different types of opportunities that exist in all three major regions. What are the three major regions as you've circumscribed them and or delineated them, and what opportunities exist there by region?
Well, the three regions I would divide is the Americas, principally the U.S., Asia-Pacific, and Europe. And in the Americas, I think, in terms of the real estate opportunities, probably the best opportunity is the one to benefit from the embedded NOI growth potential in core investments that's already there, because the real estate market's been doing well for a number of years. The occupancies have risen, the rents have gone up in different markets, but not all of that has yet flowed through at a portfolio level into the uplift you get when leases come up for renewal. And I think there's a lot of embedded NOI growth potential that we'll see in the next couple of years in North America. And at the same time, in the U.S., in North America, the increased demand and relatively limited supply in many markets suggests potential for value-add or manufacturing of core to enhance returns. And I think that's going to produce some fairly strong returns sort of going forward, driven by market fundamentals. It's almost irrespective of any capital market implications. It's a bit different in Asia-Pacific. I mean, there I think it's more of a geographic story. Australian commercial real estate has been very good, looked promising for a number of years in Sydney and Melbourne. And increasingly, that's beginning to broaden out into one or two of the regional cities, probably first Brisbane. That seems to be turning the corner after suffering through the commodities and energy slowdown. So I think that's, a story of broadening out from the best cities to some of the more regional cities in Australia. And I think opportunities are also likely to emerge in other parts of the region, for example, in China, where maybe the more gloomy outlook that people have had for Chinese real estate hasn't really come to fruition. And I think there's a possibility with China that some of the lending restrictions from central government on potential lenders and financiers of real estate may provide opportunities for international capital to be supportive of strong local partners, for instance. And then I guess finally, it's different again in Europe, where I think the likelihood is that the low interest rate environment runs low longer in Europe. That suggests yields or cap rates in much of continental Europe remain under maybe downward pressure, but certainly no upward pressure in the period ahead. And so where NOI growth is picking up with the strengthening economy in southern Europe, in Madrid, Barcelona, Milan, in the Nordics, in Stockholm, and increasingly Copenhagen, or indeed just simply in the right in the heart of the Eurozone, in Germany, the major cities of Germany, opportunities in logistics and offices, and particularly I think the residential and hotel sectors all look quite promising sort of going forward. All of this is very competitively priced. There's a little shortage of capital looking at these opportunities. But I think there is not a shortage of possibilities out there for investors to find potential for good returns.